I'm now, Phil.
It's fine.
Okay, great. I appreciate this.
If I get a call or something, I might have to grab it while we're talking.
Oh, sure. By all means, business has got to proceed.
Yes.
First, let me tell you, one of the side effects of these interviews, and I've done a few dozen now, is that the subject receives an increase in autograph requests for a period of 2 or 3 weeks afterwards. Some guys, most guys don't seem to mind this, but some do. So I tell them that ahead of time in case they want to terminate it.
Right.
Not a problem. Okay, I'll ask you maybe 10 questions. If you just answer them as long or short as you want to.
Okay, tell me first, what do you do with this interview? Where does it go?
It goes to Sports Collector's Digest. It's a baseball card publication.
So you write, you do interviews periodically for them or in each issue?
I would say probably half. It's a weekly thing. Probably half the issues I have something in it, plus occasionally a feature article or something in non-interview.
All right, Brent.
Okay, you were originally Twins property, is that right?
Well, for my first year, I signed originally with the Twins, and I was with them 1 year.
Okay, out of Ohio State?
Yeah, I went to Ohio State for 2 quarters, and then I was out of school for the summer, and then I signed with the Twins in the fall.
Okay, and the Tigers drafted you?
That's right.
Okay, from what, where you were Twins property, where were you?
I was put on the Atlanta Crackers roster. I played for the Orlando Twins my first year, and I had a pretty good year. And so they put me on the AAA roster, which was Atlanta Crackers.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the rules were different then, and a team could purchase you for a certain price if they put you on the roster of one league higher. So Detroit bought me and put me on the big league roster for the following year.
Okay, you were on the roster then, the Tigers roster in 65?
Yeah, I think it was 65.
Or 66 it might have been. 65 it would have been, yeah, because you were drafted after 64.
Yeah, just quick thinking, I think it would be, yeah, because I was in Orlando in 64, it would have had to be 65. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you got the Tigers to stay at the end of, end of 69, after you'd been at Toledo for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
1971, you may have been the best left-handed reliever in the league. 11-6, 20 saves, and you led the league with 10 wins in relief. Obviously maturity helped in there. What else contributed to your development?
Well, I don't know. I think it was over a period of the last 3 years building up to that point. I had a really, really good year in Toledo in 68. And then in 69, I was up and down. I started with the team, and I went down to Toledo, and I was back up. But I was throwing real well the whole time. And then 70, I was in a lot of games, but they didn't put me in situations yet where I could get the saves.
Uh-huh.
71, Billy Martin came to the team as a manager, and I think that's where I got the opportunity to prove that I could handle that situation, you know, in short relief there. So Billy kept putting me in, and I kept getting people out, so it just kind of snowballed, you know.
Yeah.
As long as you're doing well, they keep throwing you in there. That's all, as a ball player, that's all you ask for, and
a chance.
I did that, so.
Well, you started a game that year, your first major league start, and pitched a complete game. You remember that?
Yeah, I sure do.
Who was it?
It was late in the season. It was Baltimore. Actually, I'd pitched eight and two-thirds against them 4 days earlier in Baltimore. Joe Negro started and hurt his back in the first inning, and it was real unusual for me to come in early. But Billy brought me in the first inning, and I finished that game. So Baltimore, somehow I think they followed us back to Detroit or something. I don't remember the details, but I think it was right away, like 4 or 5 days later, I turned around and started in Detroit against them and pitched a complete game in my first start, and that was a real big thrill.
I bet it was. You remember the score?
I can guess. I think it was something like 7-3, but I'm really not sure. That sticks in my mind, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, you continued to pitch pretty decently the next year, and then the year after that, you were traded to
to Houston.
To Houston. How did it feel to get moved?
I kind of knew it was coming. The year after I had a big year, I had another real good year.
Right.
We had a good right-hander in our bullpen that following year, Chuck Seelbach.
Uh-huh.
We shared the duties a little more. And we had a good year together, although I dropped down to 12 saves and I think 7 wins or something. But Chuck had quite a few. In the following year, John Hiller came back, and John Hiller was just incredible. And when you get a man who's getting everybody out, you have to keep pitching him. And that's
sure.
the spot Billy was in. And Billy came to me and he said, "Fred, this guy's got to cool off." He said, "But you know, I got to keep pitching him as long as he's getting people out." And I said, "That, certainly, you know, I understand that. If I were in your spot, I'd have to do the same thing." So, but he never cooled off. He was great from the start to the finish of the season. So we had the problem of 2 left-handers, and we needed some other players. So I became expendable, and it wasn't a surprise. But it's always hard when you've been someplace for a long time and you have to make a change.
Well, they got 2 for you. That was a good trade for them.
Yeah.
They got a reliever and they got a second baseman.
And Gary Sutherland.
I think it turned out that maybe Houston got the better end of the deal in the long run, but it sure looked good for Detroit at the start.
Yeah, it did. Then in Houston the next year, I don't know if it was going to the AstroTurf or what, but I had a serious back injury earlier in the year, and they wanted me to play all season with it. And I don't know if you've ever had a ruptured disc or not, but they're pretty nasty.
Well, I understand. Yeah.
I played that whole season with a ruptured disc, and then I had an operation in the winter. And I really never was able to play for Houston or even Montreal after that up to the same standards that I did in Detroit.
A lot of fellas pitchers have told me that they'll refuse to run on the artificial surfaces.
Yeah, I think it's real hard on you, especially if you're already susceptible to back or leg injuries of some kind. And I'd always had back trouble off and on, but I'd always get over it in a few days or a week or something and just play through it. But I think it was the fact that going to Houston and then the National League all around had a lot more AstroTurf fields, and that running on it just finished it off. And then the Astros would not accept the fact that it was a ruptured disc, you know. And when they trade for you, they like for you to play. And this happened early in the year, and I think I was in 56 games or something that year. And there were days I couldn't tie my own shoes, and I was out there playing, and it really, really shouldn't have been like that. But then at the end of the year, I went in and had a myelogram, and I had a ruptured disc all summer.
And even after surgery, it was something you couldn't come back from fully?
Not fully. I came back and played 2 more years, but you have stiffness, mostly stiffness, and you favor things. And I just didn't have the flexibility and the freedom to throw like I had before. And I played, and I tried as hard as I could, but I just wasn't able to play on the same level as I did before.
Yeah, I understand back is probably the worst injury to get if you're going to get one.
Yeah, it's not good.
Well, Montreal, when you came there, they started you several times your first year with them.
They did. We had a lot of young kids mixed with a lot of older fellows, and we really didn't have too many established pitchers. Steve Rogers and Steve Renko was fairly established, and Woody Fryman was there. And then there was myself and Wayne Granger and Danny Worthen, and Gene Mock was the manager, and he kind of juggled us. And Montreal, we got, you know, they get snowed out, rained out a lot early in the year, so when we got in the later months, that we required a lot of pitching, just a tremendous amount. So we were starting, Gene was starting a lot of people, and so I got, I think I started, I don't know, 6 or 8 games for Montreal.
Say I've got it, 7.
7?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I started those, and I'd go as long as I could go, but I never did manage to match that first start in Detroit.
Well, that's 9 innings is a long way to go when you've been used to pitching 1 to 2.
Well, it is, especially, you know, when you're quite a bit older and you're not up to the abilities that you were earlier.
Sure.
I think earlier in my career I could have been a lot more successful, but things were going pretty well in short relief, and I like that, you know, being the center of the game late in every game is that's what it's all about.
Yeah, a lot of satisfaction.
When I came to the ballpark, I knew I might be in the game in a win-lose situation, and that's pretty exciting.
What, and we talked about your complete game, what is your best game you think you had?
Well, I don't know. Early in my career one time, Boston came in, and they had some pretty big sluggers in Scott and Yastrzemski and Petrucelli and Coniglio and that crew, and I pitched 5 innings and no hit ball, and I think I struck out 5 or 6 batters, and that's kind of the turning point when I could see and when some other people could see is, well, this guy can play here, you know, and he can be a good pitcher for us and a good big league player, and that was pretty important to me, and so I always remember that. I don't know. I saved both ends of a doubleheader one time in Milwaukee, so that's kind of a big day to remember.
Sure.
A few other games here and there, you know, where we finish a shutout for somebody or get some big outs in the ninth inning to save the game or something.
Do you remember the, well, I know you do, the 72 playoffs?
Yes.
You pitched in it. It was a real heartbreaker for Tigers and Tigers fans.
Yeah, that was tough to lose.
What game did you pitch in?
I was a pitcher in the game just before Bert Campanaris threw the bat at Larry LeGros.
Okay.
I caught a little heat over that because there were some people. I knocked Reggie Jackson down the inning earlier, and it was not an intentional knockdown. Reggie Jackson had to be pitched inside. If you let him get his hands extended, he was really a powerful hitter.
He sure was.
And I just constantly came in, and the difference in making a real good pitch and knocking him down is only four or five inches. And I was coming in on him, and the pitch got way in under his chin. And if I remember right, I think it happened twice in a row. And not intentional either time. So anyhow, I finished that inning, and then Billy pinch hit for me, and Laren came in the next inning, and he hit Campy, and then Campy threw the bat, and everything, all heck broke loose, you know. So that's the only one of those games I was in, because John Hiller that's when he was still going great guns, and there was just no other opportunity for me to get in.
I guess for a couple of years, he was probably the best in the business.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't like to say that, but it makes me feel good to think it a little bit once in a while, or somebody else realize.
Well, you know, the record's there. Who was the toughest hitter on you?
Who gave me the hardest time, huh?
Yeah.
When I was throwing well in the American League, the right-hander that gave me the most trouble was Walt No Neck Williams from the White Sox.
Mm-hmm, I remember him.
Danny Thompson from the Twins, and he was a real close friend of mine. Maybe that had something psychological to do with it, I don't know. And Bobby Mercer for left-handers. When I was throwing well in the American League, I had trouble with Bobby Mercer. I knew what I had to do, and I was never able to make a good pitch on him. I just couldn't get the ball located where I wanted it. He gave me a real hard time. He was a good hitter.
He was. He was, he wasn't a great hitter, but he was an almost great hitter.
Yeah, that's right. He was a good hitter, not a great hitter, but a good hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me trouble. And in the National League, of course, I wasn't throwing nearly as well, so there were quite a few guys who gave me a hard time. So. Won't get into all those.
Well, your earned run average went up about a run a game when you switched leagues, so it was apparent that things were not the same.
Yeah, they weren't the same. And also, you know, probably I was a ground ball pitcher, and I think probably in my case the AstroTurf fields might have added a little bit to that too, because in Detroit we had good fielders and we had long grass, and I just tried to go in and throw ground balls, and that was real successful for me in Detroit, but in the National League, a lot of those balls got through that I wasn't used to getting through. So
right.
That made a little difference, too.
The AstroTurf may be the source of all the world's ills. I do not like it.
Well, sometimes. I guess it depends on whether you're hitting or pitching or what you're doing, you know.
Well, I have a son who, like you, is a left-handed pitcher. He's in college now. As a freshman last year, he had a really good year. I'm really proud of his year, but they went to play on an AstroTurf field, and he'd never played on it before.
Uh-huh.
And he's a ground ball pitcher. And he's had infielders that were fine on grass, but on AstroTurf, they just couldn't cover the ground.
Yeah.
And I guess he got six straight ground balls that would have been fielded on grass that went through and I think the third or fourth inning,
yeah.
And he said he never wanted to see it again.
It's frustrating. It really is. If you're a pitcher, it's frustrating, and you want to get back to that grass. If
I bet so. In, what, 8 years, 9 years? 8 years in the major leagues?
Yeah, a little less than eight. I had about seven and a half.
Well, you played for quite a few managers.
Yes.
Who's the best or your favorite?
Well, I had my best years under Billy Martin. Played 3 years for Billy. So
mm-hmm.
From that point of view, I'd have to say that my happiest years, my most successful one, are Billy. I thought the manager a guy that I thought was probably the smartest baseball man was Gene Mock. You know,
mm-hmm.
I played under him in Philadelphia. He had incredible knowledge of the game. From that respect, I really enjoyed playing for him, just to watch him and see some of the things that he tried to do with the younger players we had.
A lot of people have told me that he was probably more knowledge, they say, about the game than anybody they ever played for.
He was extremely knowledgeable. I think he had a little more problem with communication. He's very, very quiet, almost an introvert, I think, and he wasn't very outgoing, but when Gene told you that you're going to pitch on July 2nd, well, you could mark it down, it was going to happen. And that usually was not the case in baseball. You usually said, well, when it happens, I'll see.
Yeah.
But he had so many other good ideas. The way he handled the guys was terrific.
Yeah, it's a shame he never got to a World Series in all the years he managed.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. Because he deserved it, all the years he put in and his all the innovations, you know, like the double switch and all the things
mm-hmm.
that he brought into the game.
Yeah, maybe someday he'll get recognized a little broader.
I'm sure he will.
Next couple of questions are mostly for the souvenir or the memorabilia collectors and baseball card collectors. Did you save souvenirs from your career?
I have a few things. I wasn't much at taking pictures or getting teammates' autographs or anything. I have uniforms or part of a few uniforms and some balls from that year in 71. As I started getting up in saves, I'd collect them and write on them, you know, save number 12 versus Yankees, August so-and-so or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I got some of that stuff. And somewhere, and it's been 20 years now, but we've got, I think my wife and my mother used to cut out all the articles and put them in boxes, and we've never looked at them. But I think we've got them in the barn somewhere or the house.
It'll be fun to go back and see those.
Yeah, someday we'll do that. I keep saying someday, but I've never done it yet.
Well, you'll slow down one of these days and have the time. Talked to one fellow, Daryl Spencer. I don't know if you remember him. Played.
Yeah, I remember Daryl.
He's got scrapbooks that have every box score he played in from high school on.
Is that right?
That must be a collection and a half.
Yeah.
I told you you're going to get more fan mail. Do you get much fan mail now?
Actually, I probably get a little more now than I did when I played. I didn't get a lot then, you know, but I'd say 3 or 4 days a week I've got one or two letters with kids sending me cards, which is a little more than I got through most of the years.
And do you sign?
Oh, yeah, I always do.
That's good. What about baseball card shows? What's your opinion of them?
What's my opinion of them?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any problem with it. You know, I don't really look deeply into it or anything, but I've gone to a few card shows, and I've signed a few times, and I think that really, I think they're pretty good. I think they're good for everybody concerned, and I think it's great that the kids have got some place to go and entertain themselves and mm-hmm. a hobby to work with.
I think it's a real good hobby. I've got two boys. The older one, I've got a little boy, 7, and the big one's gotten a little one into it. It costs a lot of money. I mean, it keeps me broke buying them cars, but I think it's a whole lot better than other things I could be doing.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. Almost any hobby they get in is going to be reasonably expensive these days.
That's for sure. But very few have the potential to return as the baseball cards do, I guess, down the road somewhere. Okay, a couple more questions, and you can go back to what you were doing. Go back, 25 years ago, I guess. Would you do this all again?
Oh, yeah, no question about it.
Good.
When we played, we didn't make any money to speak of. But the memories and the pride that you have in what you accomplish is the most important thing. And I think even today, that's still the most important thing to 99% of the players. And I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Good. That's a good attitude. What about regrets from your career? Do you have any regrets or disappointments?
No, not really.
Good.
I can't think of anything. You know, a few times I might have yelled something at somebody I wish I hadn't have or whatever, but I feel like I always gave 100% when I played, and I try to do things right, and as I look back, I don't know of anything that I regret.
Good.
Wish I'd have played a few more years. And
maybe been 20 years younger so you could be playing with the money today.
Oh, boy.
What about, let me ask that, what's the biggest change in the last quarter of a century, other than the money?
Other than the money, I think the players are so much better.
You think the players are better?
So much better, yeah. They're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. They're getting better training in the colleges. The young pitchers who come up, you know, the slider's been a tremendous advantage to pitchers in the last 15 years, and now with the split finger or fork ball, whichever one they want to call it. I think in the 90s, that's really going to be a major factor. So the pitchers get better and the hitters get stronger and quicker. You know, I think that pretty much goes for all sports. But in baseball, it's hard to tell. You know, the fans watching a game can't really tell the difference. But the quality of play amongst the players, you can see it.
You remember Steve Hamilton, left-handed
sure.
pitcher?
Yeah.
He's the athletic director at Morehead State, which is, I'm in Lexington, just 70 miles up the road. Talked with him. He said that, you mentioned all sports. He said that baseball, well, he said that 20 years ago, a man who played, a professional football player, could not play today's game. A basketball player probably couldn't compete. He says, but a baseball player, he thinks, could. What do you think?
I think some of them could. I don't think all of them could.
Well, not a blanket statement, but we're talking about the best. Even the best, he thinks, in the other two sports probably couldn't be the best today.
Couldn't be the best?
Yeah.
Well, that may be true. You know, I've heard people say that, and that's probably some validity to that. But I think the baseball players 20 years ago, the Al Kalines or Reggie Jacksons would also be excellent players today. But overall, I think that the quality of the game is, you know, just because the athletes are bigger and stronger and better trained is better than it ever was.
Okay, that's good. I get a whole lot of a variance in opinion in that. Yeah, the guys that played in the 40s, early 50s.
Right. They think the players today aren't as good as when they played.
That's right. A few exceptions. Eddie Yost says that a good player could have played any time.
A good player could, I think so.
And it's I guess there's no way to know, but it's interesting to get the opinions. Okay, Fred, thank you. Would you like to see this before I send it to the magazine?
That's not necessary. I'd like to see the magazine, though, so if you know when it's going to be in or whatever.
Well, there's about a 6-month lag from the time I submit it to the time it gets printed. But we will send you a copy when it comes out, or more than one. How many would you like?
Well, if say three's not too many. That would be nice.
Okay, that's fine. A lot of guys like to get one for their kids or for a sister or brother or something.
Yeah.
Okay, great. We'll send you three copies when it comes out. I'll let you know when it comes out. So
that's great. Tell me again which magazine?
Sports Collector's Digest.
Okay.
And you will, for a period of a couple of weeks, get probably twice the number of autograph requests. People see these things and they find out the guy's nice enough to talk, so they always write him.
I don't have any problem with that.
Great. Fred, thank you very much. I really do appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your call.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.